God said it's holy. That's right.
What we're going to look at today is how the people enter into a relationship with the Lord with a blood covenant. And they are promising Him that we will live as You have said. And we want to live in service to You. That's what they're promising Him. They've been shown a covenant, and last week we looked at the preamble to the covenant that God will make with this nation, and it's called the Ten Commandments. We know it as the Ten Commandments. But they're going to ratify a covenant, and this is now going to be a nation united by blood. And it's not just united in purpose, because this is what God wants, to be a witness to the world, to be a mediatorial kingdom. But not only united with each other as a nation, because they're going to be bound together, these 12 tribes from this family of Jacob, but be united to the Lord. I am your God, and you are my people. We're one. And so what we have in 21 to 23 is what I call the Bill of Rights. And this is a Bill of Rights for all people. You can see it's not just rights for Israel, it's rights for all people. He's going to express that within this. This is Moses' Sermon on his mountain. But what happens in chapter 24 is the most important. This is fellowship on the Lord's mountain, where God has come down and rested on top of the people who are struck with terror. Now God's going to say, I want you to come and fellowship with me. This really is where we're going to focus, because chapter 24 is the climax of the book. This is not the view Moses had in his life, but it's the one he has now. And he brought them to the southern tip of this region called the Sinai Peninsula, and he brought them to a range called the Rephidim Range, and we saw this last week. It's right there in about the southern tip. We saw last week is what he's told them is the Lord had brought them there by his power on the wings of an eagle. And what's so majestic about an eagle is it teaches its young to fly by putting the young on its wings, and then she's flying down and they fall off. And they're either going to fall to the ground to their death, or they're going to learn to fly. Well, this is how God is going to teach his people. But, you know, the mother eagle never allows the eaglet to fall to the death. It swoops down and catches them. So even when they fail, this eagle is going to save them, going to provide for them. So this is total protection. When he says, I brought you out on wings of eagles, he says, you're totally protected. And he provided for them by his providence. We saw that as they journeyed down to this place. They complain, right? But his goodness and his mercy are always there with them, even though they complained. See, they don't come to this place to get saved. They come to this place because they are saved. And they're not saved by the law that he gives them. They've been saved by blood, not by their own performance, but by the power of God. And they've been brought out through the Red Sea, not by their own power, but by the power of God. And they've been provided for all the way down to this place by the providence and the power of God. These people are brought down here. They're already saved. And he's going to say, now I want you to be a mediatorial nation. So they're saved to serve. And the law is not just the Ten Commandments. That's the preamble to a constitution they're going to get. The law they get is really found in 21, 22, and 23. Now, here's a question I posed last week. Do we need to know the Ten Commandments in order to reveal God's character? We got a yes. A bunch of yeses. If you don't know the Ten Commandments, how many know the Ten Commandments in order, verbatim? Do you need to know this law in order to reveal God's character?
No.
I'll give you two examples. Abraham.
Right.
Did he reveal God's character?
Yeah.
Who did it even better than Abraham?
Joseph.
Did he know the law?
No.
So do you need to know the law in order to reveal God's character? No. You need to be saved, believe in God, have the Holy Spirit enter into your life and work through you. Then you reveal God's character. What will it look like? Well, it'll look like the Ten Commandments. Even if you don't know them, that's what it'll look like. Paul makes the same argument in Romans chapter 1. I won't go into that. Let's go on here. The law given to Israel in 21, 22, 23, and some of the statements in the Ten Commandments confirmed existing laws. The nation they just came from had laws against murder and adultery. That's not new. They had laws against lying and bearing false witness and corrupting the court. It canceled some existing laws that they were used to living under, for instance, laws of slavery, and it changed some of those existing laws that they were used to living under. So this is the will of God for Israel. The whole law is for them. So here you have a preamble, Ten Commandments. Now you have the Bill of Rights. And what God gives Moses in 21, 22, and 23 are based on the Ten Commands that he'd spoken, but these are further elaborated. So you could say that what you now have are principles of God's justice. All people are seen as equal and valuable. This is full human rights. I'm going to start with the first one, example number one. The very first place he starts is with slavery. I think this is interesting because where did these people just come from? They know what slavery is like. They've experienced it. He takes the prevalent status quo of the culture and turns it upside down. And he's going to say a slave is going to have complete and total freedom after 6 years without paying anything. If you're going to have a slave in your land, you've got to let him go free after 6 years. Example two, women. Women are given freedom more so than any other nation. Now, less freedom in terms of freedom for men. Women did not have the same freedom as men. They were not free to do the same things as men. A woman, for example, couldn't be a priest. But there's more protection for a woman in Israeli society than in any other culture of the day. But this is the idea. They have less freedom than men in the culture, but they have more protection than men in the culture. Now, men weren't free to do just anything they want, and women couldn't. Men were to serve under the authority of God. So you come to the end of this section, and you see that men are told they must come to a central place 3 times a year and offer a feast. And that's the end of chapter 23. There's 3 feast days men must honor. They're not free to ignore it. They must bring something. Men are under the authority of God, and then women are under the authority of men. And this is God's design for authority. So we're going to move past that. I'm going to go back to 21 to 23, but I don't want to run out of time and miss this. Chapter 24, this is the union on the mountain. This is the climax or the consummation of the book of Exodus. This really is the high point. The Lord and his people enter into a covenant that will guide and protect the people until the Lord comes in the flesh as the Messiah of his people. Going to keep this people united as a nation until the Lord comes to establish his kingdom. And as I said before, 19:4 through 6 is really the heart of the Torah, because it says the 4 things there, that I bore you out on eagle's wings, I brought you to myself, that's bridal talk, that's the bridegroom bringing the bride to the chamber, I will make you my special possession. You're going to be my trophy for other nations to look at and go, oh, that's amazing, that kind of God. Look at those people. And that you will be a kingdom of priests. Now, let's look at the word ratification. Let's look at that. What's ratification mean? Well, this means to sign a document. To sign or give a formal consent to a treaty, a contract, a covenant, or an agreement, making it officially valid. Who's bought a house? You did this with the bank. This is what happens on this mountain. The difference in this and the contract you signed at the bank is this contract is signed in blood. Nobody had to sign in blood, did they? See, until this contract is signed, you can say there's one thing expresses the relationship between God and this people, distance. There is distance. God says, don't you come up on this mountain. How do you overcome that distance? Well, the two parties have to come face to face. This is 24:1-4. Here's where we're going to start reading. God said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you shall worship at a distance. 74 men coming up. And you notice what he says, you shall worship at a distance. Moses alone, however, shall come up near to the Lord. So he's the only one. Why is he the only one that come up? Because he's been established as the chief mediator. But they shall not come near, nor shall the people come up with him. Then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances, chapter 21, 22, and 23. He's going to read to them what God has said to Moses. When Moses tells them in 19:4-6 that God has brought you out on eagle's wings, he wants you to be a mediator to all the nations, the people say, oh, anything the Lord wants, we'll do. And then the Lord speaks the Ten Commandments, and they go, we don't want him to talk to us anymore. You go talk to him. So Moses goes and talks to him, and God tells him, 21-23. Now Moses comes down the mountain and says to the people, here's what God just told me. And he recounts to them all of 21, 22, and 23. And here's what the people answer in verse 3. All the words which the Lord has spoken, we will do. We want to do this. And verse 4, look at this. Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Then he arose early in the morning and he built an altar at the foot of the mountain with 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel. So Moses builds an altar. What's the altar represent? The altar represents the Lord and the glory of the Lord. And it says he builds 12 pillars. What do the 12 pillars represent? 12 tribes of Israel. These are like stone witnesses. So now they promised to do everything that it said in 21, 22, 23, 5 through 8. Then he sent young men of the sons of Israel, and they offered burnt offerings. So these young men who've been selected out are acting, are functioning like priests. They offer burnt offerings and sacrifice young bulls as peace offerings to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and the other half he sprinkled on the altar. What's the altar represent? God. Now, what's a burnt offering represent? A burnt offering represents not sin, but total dedication. So when they say, all that you have said we will do, now through the blood of this animal called a burnt offering, which is totally burned up, they take that blood and they put it on the altar. This animal that's been sacrificed will make up what you lack. It expresses, we want to commit to you. Even though we may fail, we want to commit to you. And what happens when we fail? The eagle will swoop down and catch you before you fall to your death. What's the peace offering? The peace offering expresses fellowship. So when you hear burnt offering, think this, total dedication. When you think peace offering, think this, fellowship. Because they took part of the peace offering and burn it up, but the other part they would take and share and eat. What happens when you're eating dinner with somebody? You talk, you get to know them, you develop a relationship with them. That's a fellowship. Verse 6, half the blood, put it in basins, and the other half he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant. Now, this is important. You see this progression here. So he takes half the blood, dumps it on the altar. That's honoring God. Then he takes the book of the covenant. What's the book of the covenant? 21, 22, 23. The Bill of Rights. This book expresses the covenant that they're making. And he read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. They say it again. We will be obedient. We agree with what God has said. What's happening here? Spoken words. People agreeing to the spoken words, agreeing to the terms of the covenant. We'll do that. We will be obedient. So Moses took the blood. After they say that, he takes the blood and throws it, splatters it on the people. And he says this, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. He's taking the blood of these animals. He's thrown it on the altar. He's actually, in a sense, thrown it on God and then thrown it on the people. The same blood has united them now as one. This is God saying, I want you in relationship with me. And this is people saying, I want you in relationship with us. Because this really unites them together. So now the covenant is sealed. It's sealed with burnt offerings, which means we're totally dedicated to you. And it's sealed with peace offerings, which means the food of fellowship. We go from distance to being brought near. 9 through 11 is fellowship and peace with God. Look at that. Moses went up with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And this is the height of the Torah here. This is the height. They saw the God of Israel, and under his feet there appeared to be a pavement of sapphire, as clear as the sky itself. Yet he did not stretch out his hand against the nobles of the sons of Israel. They beheld God, and they ate and drank. Why? Why could he do this now? Because they have just expressed total dedication to him. And who are these men? These are the representatives of all the rest of the people. So Israel will be mediatorial in its leadership, mediatorial as individuals, and mediatorial as a nation as a whole. But he can't bring all of the 2 million people up to this mountain. He's going to bring all the representatives of these 2 million people up to the mountain. So they're brought near to God. They're in the throne room of God. Now look at this. They may be the first to see it, but they're not the last to see it. Throne standing in heaven. One seated on it was like jasper and red in appearance. And the rainbow looking like it was made like emerald green. What do we have in Exodus 24? You see that? Saw his feet there appear to be a pavement of sapphire as clear as the sky itself. So that's the jasper. That's the clear jasper stone. Around the throne there were 24 elders and other thrones. Seated on those thrones are 24 elders. In heaven, when John's there, he sees 24 representatives. What do we have here? 70 representatives. These 70 in Exodus 24 represent Israel. These 24 in Revelation represent the church. Who do they represent? All saints of all the church age. From the throne came out flashes of lightning and roaring and crashes of thunder. What did they see on the mountain? Flashes of lightning, roaring, crashes of thunder. Is that terrifying? Yes. Is God terrifying? Yes. But is God good? Yes. Isn't it good that he can terrify us like that? Yes, because he can terrify anybody like that. It's the fear of the Lord, exactly. And it's not the kind of fear that causes despair, but it's the kind of fear that causes respect. So we go from distance to brought near to intimacy. What's intimacy mean? This means this is to be as close as you can possibly get to someone. This is what happens with Moses. He comes to know God as well as any human being could come to know God. And so Moses is told to come up to the mountain. Moses stands alone, 12 through 18. We're going to read these. Now the Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and remain there, and I will give you stone tablets with the law and the commandments which I have written for your instruction. Now these are the 10 words. This isn't all of the 21, 22, 23. These are just the 10 words. This is a summary, the preamble of the Constitution. He's going to give them these on stone. So Moses arose with Joshua, his servant. Now, Joshua we've seen before, right? Because Joshua is one he called upon to fight the Amalekites. So he's kind of the general. He's kind of the guy that fights the battles. And Moses goes up to the mountain of God. But to the elders, to the people he's leaving behind, he says, wait here for us until we return to you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. They are going to take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. So Moses goes up to the mountain. The cloud covers the mountain. And the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai. And the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses from the midst of the cloud. And to the eyes of the sons of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. So that's how they saw it. And they see Moses go right into it. Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, leaving Aaron and Hur and the 70 elders behind. This is Moses going up, and Moses stands alone as a mediator and a leader. Not only that, he's a spokesman and a delegator. He represents all the leaders. And you look at this. Where does this take place? Mount of Transfiguration. And look who's there. Moses and Elijah. They're talking with him. They're talking to him about his exodus that he's going to accomplish in Jerusalem. What's that? His exodus in Jerusalem. He's talking about the cross, the Passover event that's going to happen. Peter said to Jesus, Master, it's good for us to be here. Let us make three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Because who's up there with Peter? James and John. So John experienced this glory cloud, because notice what comes down. And as Peter was speaking, a cloud overshadowed them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. Entering the cloud of glory, only this time the cloud of glory is surrounding Jesus Christ himself. And then there's a voice, comes from the cloud, saying, this is my son, my chosen one, you listen to him. Who's the mediator? Jesus, yeah. And Jesus, unlike Moses, Jesus is a mediator who will never, ever fail and never, ever die again. He died once. He's never going to die again. Perfect mediator. When they hear this voice, they fall down as if dead. Jesus has to come and say, don't be afraid. Get up. You're okay. He's gone. You can talk to me now. Same thing that happened to the people of Israel on Mount Sinai. This is Moses meeting the leaders of the new dispensation. The leaders of the church are going to be these guys. These are the apostles of the church. And he gets to be in the glory cloud again. That's amazing for Moses. What an experience. Well, let's go through very quickly the Bill of Rights, chapters 21 through 23. And I already touched on these, the rights of a servant, the rights of a slave. That's how this starts. It wants to start with saying, look, human beings are valuable. Human beings have dignity. You cannot treat people like mere property. The rights of the betrothed maiden. The next one is 12 through 17 on homicide. Homicide or murder is not always a capital crime. You find out in this section. There are variations in this law. You may kill someone by accident. You won't lose your life for that. So you find out that there's rights of the injured. If you injure someone, the principle of what's called lex talionis kicks in. The payment must match the loss. Because what he's saying here is the punishment must fit the crime. This is trying to do away with revenge justice. And say, look, you cannot take more from a person than you've lost. And the notion of eye for eye, tooth for tooth, etc., isn't as if you injure somebody's eye, they get to injure your eye in the same way. If there is a loss of an eye, and there's an example in here. If you punch out the eye of your servant, he gets to go free. So that's lex talionis. The punishment must fit the crime. That's all that means. You cannot demand more of someone than you lost. The next one is the rights of the property owner. Lex talionis applies to this as well. If someone destroys your property, justice and payment must be fair. They've got to replace it. You can't kill a guy again for damaging your property, which that is called revenge justice. So what that's all does is limits that. The next one is protecting society and morals. This is a big one. There's a lot in here. This is a long section. Look at the one section here, 21 through 23. One little note is all I'm going to say. 21 through 23. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him. Now this would be someone who's not a Hebrew, not an Israelite, one who comes into your country. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. So don't treat people that come into your land the way you got treated in Egypt. You shall not afflict any widow or orphan. Affliction in the sense of cheat them, abuse them. If you afflict him at all, he's talking about an orphan here. And if he does cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry. And here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do against you, Israel. My anger will be kindled, and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives then are going to become widows, and your children will become fatherless or orphans. Protecting society and morals is not just dealing with sexual immorality. It's dealing with the way you treat people who cannot defend themselves. It's the way you treat people at the bar of justice. It's the way you treat widows, the way you treat orphans, the way you treat the strangers that come into your country. It says, if you do this, I will kill you. 23:1-9 really is kind of a summary statement. It's love for all and justice for all. Now the next section really talks about the relationship to the Lord himself. And the relationship to the Lord's going to say the first thing is there's going to be a sabbatical year. You're going to work 6 years, and the seventh year you're not going to work. You're not going to plant crops, and it's in that seventh year you're going to let the poor come into your fields and gather up all the food they want to take. And I'm going to provide for you. That's the year I'm going to provide for the poor. You're going to let them have full access to your fields, and they're going to garner what they can garner, and that provides for them. And there's going to be also a Sabbath day that you're going to rest, to recuperate, and to honor me. Because this is a day that I set aside after I finish creation. So what you're going to do, you're going to think about resting in God. That in that seventh year, God has to provide for us because we're not going to do any work for ourselves. And on that seventh day, we're going to rest in God. He's going to say in 13-19, worship only the Lord. Then he's going to outline three Sabbath feasts that they're going to have to carry out in the future. Number one, there's going to be the Feast of Unleavened Bread that begins with Passover. The next one's going to be the Feast of Weeks. We call that Pentecost. The third one is going to be the Feast of the Ingathering of the Harvest. We call that the Feast of Booths. Men must come to these three times a year, and they must bring something. They must bring a sacrifice. They can't come empty-handed. In 22:33, the Lord promises, I will be with you. Because they just entered into this covenant, I'm going to be with you. I'm never going to leave you. And here's where he really kind of outlines that the condition for obtaining the blessing in the land is going to be their obedience as his people. Their inheritance is based on their obedience to him. And meaning that their inheritance is not salvation. Going into the land is not salvation. Salvation came by faith. But their blessing is going to be based on their obedience. And why is that? Because the reason I brought you here is because you're saved to serve me and represent me. And how did they get here? They got here because God saved them. So in Exodus, we go on. Next to 32-34, which talks about failure, intercession, and restoration. 32, 33, 34. And so in order to get up to 32, you have to read 25-31. I would encourage you to read that. So that's where we're going next week. We're out of time. Let's pray.